It is a Brett Winterbull show. That's a dance version of Nirvana that smells like Teen Spirit.
It smells like Teen Spirit dubstep, baby.
Club 760. It's a Brett Winterbull show, AM 760 talk and breaking news. So we're joking around about the apocalypse and the end times and all that kind of stuff. We'll take some calls in a little bit. But I want to welcome to the show a very, very good friend of mine, a friend of the show, Father Bill Nicholas from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles joins us on the line. Father Bill, how are you?
Doing good, Brett. It's been a while.
It's good to have you back. Look, the world has just been, let's be honest, it's just been nuts for about a month. I mean, it's just been off its rocker. And it's got people believing this speculation about the planet Nibiru or Nabu or whatever it is coming to collide with Earth. It's going to be the end times. What is this all rooted in? Like, where do we get all this this apocalyptic fixation, and where's this all coming from?
Well, I don't know exactly where it's all rooted in, but I think even in the Bible, in the very, very beginning of Christianity, you see almost expressed a tendency for Christianity to look toward that end time when Christ is going to come again in the end of the world. And I look at it all the way back to the time when Jesus ascends into heaven at the very beginning of the Acts of the Apostles. What's left? He's got these 11 guys looking up in the sky after he leaves, and they don't even know the two men. Notice the two men who are come up looking up like, what are you looking up in the sky for? And the basic message of that is you've got work to do. And so as Christians, we really aren't supposed to fixate. Mm-hmm. We wait for Christ to come again, but we're not fixated on it. Jesus doesn't even know when he's coming. Only the Father knows, and he's not telling anyone. And the message of that scene right after the ascension is that he's going to come back, but don't be looking for him. You've got work you got to do, which, of course, is to spread the word. But when it comes to the books in the Bible, especially, that people like to focus on with regard to predicting the end of the world, they tend to be one in each of the Old and New Testament, the book of Daniel in the Old Testament and the book of Revelation in the New Testament. And, you know, just like in poetry, we have certain types of poems like sonnets or haiku, depending on the style or the format of it. Just in literature, we have different styles of literature. We've got drama, we've got plays, we've got other forms, comedy. We also, in the Bible, have multiple types of literature. We've got legal codes in the law. We've got poetry. We've got songs. We've got letters. We've got biographies. But those two books, Daniel and Revelation, come from a style that's called apocalyptic literature, which flourished roughly, and I'll give the religious references to time, from 200 B.C. to 200 A.D., the Common Era. It flourished mainly around those times and rose principally out of times of conflict. And it's a particular style of literature that these books reflect, which is mainly it's a narrative framework. It tells a story, but not a personal story. Apocalyptic literature tends to be more of a universal story, universal eschatology. And it's usually of a message given by an otherworldly being, like an angel or an elder, to a human recipient. And it speaks of a transcendent reality that's both temporal and spatial. It's of time and it's of space. It speaks of heaven and earth. It speaks of time periods and so on. And it's a distinct style of literature. We don't see it as much today, obviously. And there were other works that were written around this time besides Daniel and Revelation. But those are the two apocalyptic styles of writing that ended up in the Holy Scriptures. And so a lot of their imagery, while I like to say the imagery in them is literary, in that, you know, they're literary symbols that help to express the point that the author wanted to make, we don't necessarily take those symbols literally, except insofar as they're expressing the point that the author wants to make. And so that's where people often fall into error in interpreting these books, is they look at the symbols and they take them literally and miss the literary aspect of it, which is the underlying point that the author wants to make. In other words, we lose the point the author wants to make,
right,
because we're taking these symbols literally. And to give you an example, the book of Revelation speaks very heavily to the historical experience of persecution that the early Christian church had, especially in that first century. And the book of Revelation was written roughly from 90 to 100 of that first century of Christianity. And it was addressing principally the persecution of the Emperor Domitian. And what it does is it harkens back to a previous persecution of Nero in its symbolic language to give hope for the people of the present hope for the future and meaning for the present. And you basically look beyond the symbols to the greater reality behind the experience of the people, which, okay, they're experiencing a terrible persecution at the hands of the Roman Empire. There's something greater going on here, which is heaven versus hell, God versus the devil, the church versus the Roman Empire, Christ versus Satan, and we experiencing this persecution have a part to play by enduring, by not giving up the faith. And the book of Revelation becomes, in many ways, I like to refer to it as the ultimate pep talk to a persecuted community. Mm-hmm. And as it's found in the scriptures, it would have a universal appeal to all peoples of all times, especially people who are experiencing persecution, particularly for their faith.
And so, in my layman's knowledge here, we should understand that when you read the book of Revelations and you look at the persecutions doesn't then mean that all the other stuff, all the good acts you're supposed to do, being a good neighbor, loving your neighbor, taking care of each other, being a good Samaritan, that kind of stuff, that stuff should stop. It needs to ramp up then, right, at that point. You need to keep doing that to helping your neighbor. And I say this against the backdrop of the earthquake in Mexico City and the hurricanes and all that. No, those are horribly bleak, terrible things, but amidst that, there's real true Christian love and heroism,
people
helping each other out, saving lives, digging people out of the room. I mean, right, so it just because the end times begin doesn't mean you forget everything else and you just kind of sit there and wait for it all to end, right?
Right. And even Jesus himself, although it wasn't an apocalyptic writing, it's in the Gospels, it's his discourse on the end times, he says, you will see earthquakes, you will see famines, you will see wars. It's not the end. He says it explicitly. That does not mean it's the end. The end is coming later. And he says there will be people coming up and saying, I am he, or the end is now. He says three times, don't listen to them. And yet you hear people often falling into that pattern of an earthquake or a hurricane or an election, and people having their doomsaying about, the end is near. Although one interesting point that even the book of Revelation could speak of to today, I mean, the book of Revelation really has nothing to do with the future. It speaks to realities of the present. One favorite image is the number of the beast.
Yes.
I mean, we had a whole trilogy of the omen in which the omen is marked with the 666. And while many believe that that is a number of, in particular, the name that symbolizes the name of Caesar Nero, many people don't look at the effect of that number. Where people say, unless you're marked, unless you're so marked by the beast, then they won't let you buy or sell in the marketplace.
Right.
It's kind of like an anti-Christian apartheid. Unless you, in this particular case, worship the emperor as a god, which Christians would not do, you'd be given perhaps some certification that you have done this, and that would be your license to barter, to buy, to sell. Well, look at what we see today of many Christians who don't hold to a certain moral code, and they're not allowed to sell their wares in a local market or a farmer's market. You see similar things like that here and abroad, and so what Revelation does speak of is anti-Christian persecution, anti-Christian animosity that the people are suffering. And that's why those books are so universal to us, because we can read them today and recognize the conflict and appreciate the message of endurance. And the whole notion of the end, the idea of the end, we, at least Catholics, as far as I'm not a spokesperson for the Catholic Church, but as I understand it and preach it as a priest, is we don't approach the end as the end of the world, although we wait for Christ to come again, we wait for the new kingdom to come. When we think of end, we think of mainly two things: the purpose for which all things were made, like the end of creation. We say things like, education is an end unto itself. So an end is a purpose. But we also think of end as a transition, like the book of Daniel speaks to the persecutions under King Antiochus against the Jews in the mid-2nd century B.C., and it looks to the end of that persecution or the end of the Babylonian exile, but not just the end of something, but the beginning of something else. So it was the end of persecution and the beginning of restored Israel. For the book of Revelation, it's the end of persecution and the beginning of God restoring his people. We look to the end of this era and the beginning of the kingdom that is to come. So it's never just an ending of something. And the book of Revelation looks especially to the end of persecutions and to hang on as people of faith, as people enduring this, because in the end, the triumph will be theirs. And so that's how they understand the end, not in terms of when the world is going to get careened by a planet whose name we can't seem to remember.
Right. Father Bill Nicholas, Archdiocese of Los Angeles, that was great. Thank you so much for coming by.
And earlier you were asking, how am I going to spend my last night here with the ending?
What are you doing?
I'm going to bed.
Be careful. He may come like a thief in the night, Father. Be prepared.
Well, you know, I won't feel a thing, I guess.
Thank you, Father Bill. I appreciate it.
But anyway, have a good night.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. Father Bill Nicholas checking in. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Father Bill's got a book on everything we were just talking about a minute ago. I Saw the World End, An Introduction to the Bible's Apocalyptic Literature. Check it out. It's a great book. I've got it. I've read it. It's dynamite stuff. Father Bill Nicholas writing that book.